Okay, guys, let's start. So we are going to take up, and this will take us, I assume, 2 weeks, one of the most famous Agadic passages in all of Agadah. It's up for the Rambam. This is the Agadah that basically drives the way he thinks about truth and the sources of truth and the like. So it is important that we cover it this year. I know that you guys in Rabbi Sklarsher have touched on it, but only touched on it. We're going to spend time. Most of what we're going to do, I think, is I'm going to draw on Rabbi Slivkin has two articles on this Gemara. I'm going to draw on them. We're not going to read the whole article inside, but I was debating, do I pick out the Makorot or do we have a discussion around the Makorot and focus on the Gemara and have you actually do it? I can, you know, draw on his sources. That's all right. I'm going to go in that direction. I can send, you can look at the book. I can send you at least one of the articles available online, probably both. Okay, and that is the Gemara about the path of the sun. The
which page?
The path, Tzadi Dalet, right? The path, you are, the, of all people, you're doing it in what? It was this week. That was this week.
Yeah, but I wasn't here for that, remember?
Oh my God, a long time ago. You're killing me. You're killing me, you know that? What? Okay, good. So the what? I'm just pulling it up. One second, I'm just pulling it up in color for a second. Okay, fine.
So the Gemara on Tzadi Dalet Amud Bet. Got it?
So the Gemara on Tzadi Dalet Amud Bet says as follows. Okay, there is the following discussion between Rebbe and Rebbe Acha Bar Yaakov. Second, where are we? Here we go. Tana Rabba.
Chachmei Yisrael?
Yeah. Chachmei Yisrael, Omrim, Galgal Kavua, Umazalot Chozrim. So the Chachmei Yisrael say, that, what does that mean?
The earth is permanent.
That the glow, the sphere is set, and the zodiacs the move. Right? They v'chachmei omer omrim galgal chozer umazalot kvuim. Right, and the chachmei umot ha'ulam say that the galgal moves. Right, the globe moves, the sphere moves, and the mazalot, the constellations, stay. And Amar Rebbe, tshuva l'divrei me'olam lo matzinu. We have never found, right, a response to their word. What is it? Because agala b'darom v'akrav b'tzafo. Okay. The the great bear is the whatever is in the south and scorpion is in the north. So matkiv la Rav Acha bar Yaakov Dilma kibutzina derechaya. Maybe it is like the axle of a millstone. Inami kitzinora didasha. Or it is like the hinges of a door, okay, of the door socket. I'll explain that in just a minute. Chachmei Yisrael Omrim, and then the sages of the Jews say, "Bayom, during the day, chama mehalechet limato min arakia, the sun goes under the firmament, uvalayla limalo min arakia, and at night it goes above the firmament." Chachmei Umora Olam Omrim, "Bayom chama mehalechet limato min arakia." During the day, it goes under the firmament. And then at night, it goes under the earth. And Amar Rebbe, near in Divrehem Midvarenu, the Chachmei Umot HaOlam seem correct. Shebiyom Ma'ayanot Sonenin, because during the day, if you go to the springs, they are cool, which implies the sun is not there. Uvalayla rotchen, and as night, if you go in a spring at night, yeah, it is boiling. That doesn't make any sense. Yeah. And then the Gemara goes on to explain other things. So there's a, okay. So there's a few things we need to understand about this Gemara. Okay? Now, the first thing you need to understand the Gemara is what exactly are they talking about. First point. The second thing we need to think of it is, right, what do we do with the fact that Chazal acknowledged they are wrong? Does that tell us something in general?
Wait, when did they say they were wrong?
Near in, direct. Okay, are they, we have to say, what does it mean when they say they seem right? Does that mean they are right? It seems right, but they're still wrong, right? What does that tell us about epistemology, right, in non-Torah issues, and the like, right? That's where the Rambam jumps in this Gemara and says, aha, as we'll see, you see that the rabbi thought they could be wrong. Right? And then we have to understand what's actually going on, and is it literal, right? There's all types of things we have to do, but you can see right off the bat why this Gemara is super important for the very epistemology of Chazal, and that's how the Rambam really sees it, okay? The first thing, and this I literally just, I have nothing to add to it. Like, maybe he's wrong, but I have no way of knowing. Let's just describe what they are doing, okay? Here I'm just going to draw from Rice Lifkin. I'm going to trust that he is basically right. I don't know. I have no way of knowing this independently. I could do a tremendous amount of research into Babylonian and Ptolemaic cosmology. Let's just get enough to understand what they are doing, okay? So here he notes that you have to realize that and understand this, Chazal are living in a world that basically there are two cosmologies that people that are in play. There's the Babylonian cosmology, right? And the Ptolemaic cosmology. Okay? So we have these two machlokot, right, about the sun and the moon and about the constellations and the sphere of the earth. Now you have to understand that these two issues are in fact the subject of dispute between the Babylonians and the Ptolemaic astronomers. And Chazal are basically mapping themselves on here to the Babylonians. Okay? So here's his description. The Babylonian cosmology is that the earth, now it's not that the earth is a sphere, it's not round, they don't believe the earth is round, they don't know that yet, okay? But the earth is, this is what he claims, I don't know if this is true, but the earth is a flat or roughly flat disk, and the rest of the universe is a hemispherical solid dome fixed above it, like this, okay? Right? Yeah, okay, fine. Right? It's a half circle. Got it? Yeah. Half circle. Great. It's like a half circle. It's not complicated. Half globe. I don't know. A half dome. A dome. I don't know. A snow globe. Yalla? Okay? Not a snow globe. A, the flat snow globes. You know, the ones with the bottom that are flat, not the whole. I don't know. Whatever. Fine. So according to this, the star, guys, the stars move around the surface of the dome. Right? So this is what Chazal are saying, right? That they say that the sphere is fixed and the constellations revolve within it. This is what the Babylonians thought, right? That you had, correct, right? That the stars, right? You have the earth like this, right? It's flat, and then there's a this half sphere above it, and they move, right? They sort of spin around.
The problem is, that's what you were saying before about the springs, because how about the sun go under the springs then?
Not, stop. Not there yet. Second, the Ptolemaic scientists, again, this is just to understand what's going on. The Ptolemaic view, this he writes that this is Ptolemy in the Almagest, says no, the earth is a perfect sphere, and the rest of the universe is a larger sphere which encompasses it and revolves around it. Okay, it's concentric spheres. Okay, and the stars are permanently embedded in the surface of the larger sphere and move along with it, meaning what Chazal called, in their words, meaning in the Chachmei Umot, that the sphere revolves and the constellation are fixed, right? Meaning this, they don't move within the sphere, the sphere moves, right?
Very interesting.
Right? Okay, that's what they think.
Right, yeah.
Fine. Second one. Their second. So that explains the first machloket. Second machloket, right? So here Chazal are just lining up with the Babylonian cosmology and the Chachmei Umot Olam are lining up with the Ptolemaic, the Copernican, right? As he said, this is not the first revolution. This is the first, right? This is the pre-revolution, right? Before pre-Copernican, there was the Ptolemaic revolution of the Babylonian cosmology. Fine. Now we move. So now the Gemara says that what was the response We've never found the Great Bear constellation in the south and the Scorpion in the north. And Rav Acha says, no, it's like the axle of a millstone or the hinges in a door socket. Again, the reason I'm following him is because I have no idea what any of this means. Fine, this is what he says it means, okay? Rebbe says that the Ptolemaic view, again, the multiple sphere theory is correct. Why? Because if it was... No, sorry. Rebbe is defending the Babylonian view, right? He says, no. If it were a celestial sphere revolving around the earth, in which the constellations are embedded, then the constellation should move all over the place, because we're staying still, and then there's a... Right? Meaning if the Greeks were right, then all the constellations keep moving. We stay still, and then the sphere around us moves. But they don't. Right? Which implies, not like that, right? But implies, right, that they move. I'm not really sure why this helps. Second. I think it's just because they're changing, right? They're moving. Right, like the whole sphere is moving. I don't know.
Below you, I think, then it'll
yeah, it'll change spots rather than moving and like that. Yeah. Right, and Rabbi Acher by Yaakov says no, because the sphere could have a north-south axis, right? If it rotates along a north-south axis rather than a, right, like this, right, rather than like this, right? It goes this way, right? Meaning, then it won't be moving from your perspective. Okay. Fine. I'm not sure I understand that, but the point is that Big Adol, this is a machloket about... Okay, fine. Now, what's his proof that this is what they're talking about? He says some disagree, but he says his proof that on pshat, this is what they're arguing about, is that these arguments are found almost identically in the writings of Cosmas, Indicopleustis.
I don't know.
You want to? Oh, okay. Here, see if you can pronounce that.
So when did they say they were wrong?
Indicopleustis.
Yeah, sure. Whatever. Of Alexandria, a 6th century monk, right? Right, and this is how he presents basically the same argument, which is, but you will most effectively rebuke them if you say, why does that celestial sphere of yours not revolve from the north to the south or from some other quarter to its opposite? But if, again, it rolls and rotates almost on the same spot without moving from place to place, then it must be upheld by supports like a turner's lathe or an artificial globe or an axle like a machine or wagon. And if so, then we must again inquire by what the supports and axles themselves have held, and so on ad infinitum. When these problems then concerning the nature of things are discussed, there remains the conclusion to be said that the heaven is fixed and does not revolve. Sure. Mm-hmm. Huh. But his point is that he uses the same language, right? It's not just that he says, maybe it's like a hinge, a door hinge. I mean, literally, this is just the defense that people were saying in the favor of the Babylonian cosmology. If you get it, great. If you don't get it, I'm not sure I get it. Fine. What about the sun? Okay, what about the sun, Machloket? So he says this is a corollary of the first dispute, because according to Chazal, so again, it's flat, and then we have the firmament above us. It can't continue downwards, because flat. Where's it going to go? Right, so what does it do? Right, so what do Chazal say? It travels below the firmament, night above the firmament. All it can do is, right, goes like this, and then it has to cross back and go, right? So it's never entering us, right? It has to go like this, and then crisscross, go, right? So there's the firmament, and then it's both are above us, right? But there's the,
right, meaning we're here, right? And then you have... this sphere, and the firmament is here, the sun goes like this, but then the only way for it to get back is to reverse.
What?
But
still above, what?
Still above Earth, though.
So above Earth, correct.
So there's a heating springs.
Right? So 1 second, right? So it enters horizontally. On the other hand, right, the
Chachmei Ola said that it is spherical,
right? And therefore, the sun can make a full orbit around the Earth.
Because you have these circles,
right? So it just keeps going around, right? that was wrong. This way, right? Keeps going around. It can go around, right? And now Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi says, no, this is the point. That's his. This is proof of Chachmei Umar Olam. He said they seem right. Why do they seem right? Because according to me, here are the springs, right? Here are the springs. Why is it that in the morning they're cold and at night they're hot? According to him, it should never change. The sun's up here, heating it from up here.
Right.
But according to them, if you have springs here, as the sun moves around, it's heating them up. So Rabbi Yehuda says, aha, you know what? The Ptolemaic system explains why these springs are sometimes hot and sometimes cold, because the sun is going around. According to the Babylonian view, it's not, because the sun is always above.
I mean, I guess.
Right?
There has to be another explanation, like maybe geothermal, but even then it would still be hot during the day. Yeah, but now I'm trying to figure out how the...
Right, now, right, so right. So this is what he says the Metzius is of the Gemara. Okay, is that this is the Machloket. Okay, now, he continues, one second. And he notes that Chazal elsewhere also indicate that they held, at least at some point, of the Babylonian cosmology. Okay? So he notes, for example, the Gemara in Bava Basra quotes the following. I'll read you his English, fine, for now, because I don't want to open it up. But Rabbi Elazar says the world is like an excedra, and the northern side is right like a portico, a gazebo, it's a gazebo,
okay. Can you run that back?
Right? And the northern side is not enclosed, and when the sun reaches the northwestern corner, it bends back and rises above the firmament, right? Meaning Chazal are clearly saying, right?
Door goes around, you know, yalla.
Fine. And Rabbi Yeshua says the world is like a tent, and the northern side is enclosed, and the sun reaches the northwestern corner, it circles around and returns on the other side of the dome, as it says, traveling to the south and circling to the north, Kohelet, traveling to the south by day and circling to the north by night. It continually passes around, and the wind returns again to its circuits. This refers to the eastern and western sides. The sun sometimes passes around and sometimes traverses. Fine. I don't know. The point is that it's going around.
The sun is really around the earth.
Well, we are.
And he notes that the exact same arguments appear in Severianus, Bishop of Gabala, who died in 408, who writes that the earth is flat and the sun does not pass under it at night, but travels through the northern parts as if hidden by a wall. Right. So this is apparently just like what the Babylonians believe. And he notes similarly that, again, same view is stated by Cosmos Inde Capustus. I don't know. Right, him. Okay? Now, there are other views, the Yerushalmi. There's a view in the Yerushalmi in Rosh Hashanah that there are 365 different windows that the sun can come back into. Right? A very complicated view, but all following this. Okay? That's 15-20 minutes just on the pshat of what's going on. But the point is that what Chazal are doing in pshat is arguing about the same way, right, you could have the church arguing around Galileo, is the Copernican revolution, is it true or not? Right? They're arguing, is the Ptolemaic revolution correct or not? What? Yeah, well, there they were Moda also, so it's very complicated. Or they were sort of Moda, not Moda. Very, very complicated what actually happened in the Galileo. Yeah, it's a more complicated story. It's not clear how much they weren't. They didn't, but maybe they did, or they were open to it. Yeah, okay, very complicated. Fine. Story for a different time. But we have several books in the Beit Midrash that talk about this, including the one I'm currently looking at, which is yet another reassessment of this by Paul Dicken, I think. Anyway, it's not important. Fine. There are two questions you got to deal with here, right? Well, there are a lot of questions you have to deal with. What I want to deal with today is... Now, okay. So, in Ray Slifkin's book, he has two chapters that are devoted to this. One is just the local thing, and the other is you know, the broader question of reading... I got it, but let's start here with the epistemic question that Rishonim derived from this, okay? So if you read this Gemara, what would this teach you? Not about, now that we have this, that they're arguing with the Ptolemaic, and assuming pshat, that this is an actual machloka, a scientific machloket. What is the epistemic lesson you learn, Ezra, from this Gemara?
That when it seems you're wrong in science, then...
Very good! Right? That when you... That the first thing is, if this is pshat, right, what you learn from here is that Chazal are okay being wrong, at least in science, right?
How do we know that it's only science?
This is the minimalist view.
So far, what we know,
right, is that one, is that if, right, if this is literal... Right? Then it applies that Chazal are willing to admit being wrong in science. Right? That's the first shot, and that is supported by who? Right? No, right now, who takes this view? So there's an anonymous Tshuva Nigonim that says this. Right, that that this matter is not part of the laws relating to property nor capital offenses. Right, there's not Isser v'Heter, there's not anything. Right, there's no halacha related to it. And therefore he says, right, no, right, at least when it's science, nobody disputes it. Right, he says the Gonim just say, right, the Tshuva Gonim just says very simple. This is not halachic, so there's nothing wrong with it. There's really two things that we learn. Right, one is that we admit we can be wrong, and two is we can learn science from going, right, from non-Jews, right? Meaning, at the very least, we learn that, right?
Do other people disagree with this?
Second, right, and that's totally fine. Okay, who seems to view it this way? Shri Ragon or Rav Haigon, right? Have no problem saying that Chazal were wrong about in their original understanding of astrology, right? The Rambam famously in the Mor Nebuchim loved this passage. And the Rambam, and I'll quote you here in the English because I don't know the Arabic, so there's no reason to go for Hebrew. One of the ancient opinions that was widespread among the philosophers and the general run of people consists in the belief that the motion of the spheres produced very fearful and mighty sounds. This opinion also is generally known in a religious community. Do you not see that the sages describe the might of the sound produced by the sun when Riday proceeds on its way into the sphere? Aristotle, however, does not accept this and makes it clear that the heavenly bodies produce no sound. Okay, he's talking about a totally different machloket, sound. Okay? You should not find it blameworthy that the opinion of Aristotle disagreed with that with the sages, may their memory be blessed. As to this point, for this opinion, I mean to say the one according to which the heavenly bodies produce sounds is consequent upon the beliefs in a fixed sphere and stars that return. You know, on the other, that in these astronomical matters, they prefer the opinion of the sages, the nations, the world, to their own. They explicitly said the sages of the nations of the world have vanquished. And this is correct. For everyone who argues in speculative matters does this according to conclusions which he was led by his speculations. Hence, the conclusion whose demonstration is correct is believed. So the Rambam takes this as a general proof of... experimentation, right? Whatever. The point is, you can be wrong, you experiment, whoever's right is right. That's it. No problem. Yeah.
I think you guys are present in this, because as our assistant pointed out, Chazal's opinion are also based on the Babylonians. So they're not even forming their own opinions. They're taking their original opinions based on some guy and then saying, no, other guy are better.
Correct, right? Which is, right, fascinating. According to this, right, it's more than that. It's that they have no hava mina, that they should be the experts. They're totally comfortable taking different sciences, and then, you know, they weigh it out. Correct. Now, it is interesting that the Rambam's girsa seems to, either he's paraphrasing, or his actual girsa in the Gemara is stronger, and this will become important in a little bit, which is, what is the girsa that he quotes? Nitzchum, rather than you're in, right? They vanquished them, which implies that he thinks that there's no two ways about it, that Chazal think that they were wrong and the nations were right. Well, we'll see that his point doesn't change, but we'll see that this is relevant because it negates the possibility of Rabbeinu Tam's view. Now, there is another technical difference with our Girsa, which isn't so crazy, which is that the Rambam says that the discussion, that the statement that the rabbis that the rabbi said the Chachmei Yerushalmi are right was true on the first line, on the first argument, right? Meaning even on the first argument. Okay, whatever. But in some manuscripts, it's not clear, but okay, fine. Alternatively, very simply, as we saw, the machloket may be related, right? And that's what the Rambam says. No. The reason that the Rambam says that is because they're related. They're both about the structure of the world, and therefore you're right on both or you're right on neither. Doesn't matter. Rav Avram and Rambam also quotes this to prove that, to go farther and say not just this, but his third thing that he adds here is that Chazal have no Misora about science.
But didn't they start the Misora on a lot of these things?
No, but he says they don't have any Misora about science, because if they did have Misora about science, they wouldn't be able to argue it. So that's the third Chiddush, as it were.
Wait, why couldn't they argue that?
That, right? Now, and Shmuel of Intibon has a, right, has an anathem here, right, let's call this 3B, which is that what you see is that Chazal were lacking in their knowledge of science.
Lacking, and that's just all they were able to get.
No, meaning, not. I'm not saying like it's their fault. The point is that he has no problem saying, yeah, they didn't know everything. That's the point. Like, I mean, that's not right. What? Shmuel ibn Tamar, right? Talmud of the Rambam, right? Now, Rabbi Yitzchak ben Yedia, who in Eretz Yisrael suggests that maybe this is the difference between Babel and Eretz Yisrael. Maybe in Eretz Yisrael, where they did know more than in Babel. I don't know if this is true. But fundamentally, they were very, very comfortable with saying that Chazal were wrong on science because there's no Besar about it, and you just do experiments, and whatever's right is right, and that's it, right? And therefore, they took this Gemara as a very important source for their epistemology. But it's not only, right? It's not only the rationalists. Many Rishonim who are not considered rationalists. Took this Kedavar Pasha, the symbol of Draw the Gemara, is that we're wrong, even the Halacha. So, for example, in a very surprising passage, the Urayim says, aha, because we possibly that the sun goes under, and therefore, what was the Nafkamina in the Gemara? That the hot springs are hot, right? Right? He says, therefore, you should only use water to knead matzah that you drew after day because you don't want it to be hot, which will speed up the...
He's like contradicting the whole thing, though. Because he's saying, you see that they're wrong, but once they finish the Gemara, then we can never say that they're wrong.
Sure. Rav Torjus ben Yosef Abu Lafia, that was a leading Kabbalist, and he says, he has a different argument. It's also very interesting. He says that when the Gemara talks about Soda Ibor...
What's that again?
Right, the secret of intercalation of the stars. It can't be astronomy. Why? Because the Soda Ibor is something that's conveyed by Chazal's having Masora. We're not going to be wrong about Masora. We're not going to change Halacha based on Masora that's passed down from Moshe. So it must be that astronomy is not the Soda Ibor, because when it comes to astronomy, we accept.
Wait, they assume it's from Moshe the Masora? I thought they assumed from earlier.
Whatever it is, wherever you accept. The point is, he thinks that the Soda Ibor is not this, because this... They were right, we're wrong, so our Masora isn't going to be wrong. Right? But you see that he takes this as a given in many, many, many stages. We're not afraid of this, right? And this, so this epistemic view becomes quite dominant. Okay? However, who does, yeah. Yeah, the Ramban by the Rainbow is a great example, right? Where the Ramban, right, like these are like the two famous ones, is the Ramban by the Rainbow said that when I read the Pshat of the Torah, I originally thought that it meant that God created the rainbow specifically for this, but then I was told by the scientists that no, a rainbow is just a fraction of light. Whatever, I didn't say in those words, but yes, it's a fraction of light. And he said, and then I look back at the Torah and he says, aha, it doesn't say created, it says natati banan. I put it in the cloud. And I saw that they were right, right? Because it's not that they created a new, God created a new thing called a rainbow. He used something that already existed called the rainbow. So, aha, you see that this is, right, that in science they can be right, he's willing to accept it, fine. And that epistemic view becomes very, very important.
Well, wait, so there's a difference, sorry, it's from Moshe Bessina, right, that we can't argue with because that's directly from Hashem. But if it's something from later on, like what if in the times of Sanhedrin they said, I mean, the example, like with the worms, right? Worms come out of nowhere here.
I'm not getting to the general question right now of Chazal being wrong with science. Not now. It's not going to do it now.
This whole thing is about.
Yes, but I want to first study this Gemara. What we learn from this Gemara, then we can extrapolate. Then we can talk about it. But let's start with this Gemara, right? What do we learn from this Gemara? And the answer is, for many, it's this. However, Rabbeinu Tam was having none of it. Right? So, no. So, here...
Said that somewhere else.
Sure. But here, Rabbeinu Tam is quoted by Shetuk Mekubetzet in Ksubot as saying as follows. He says, no, Chazal are...
Right.
Chazal were right.
About what?
About what? So, he says...
Rabbeinu Tam is like...
Nirin. Right? Nirin. He says, what does Nirin mean? What's wrong?
He burnt himself.
There's burn cream in the thing.
Just run under water.
Fine. What's Nirin?
It
seems, meaning at first glance they're right, but right, they're not right. Why? Because of things that, right? Because Rabbeinu Tam, of certain things that he thinks about Zmanim, right? This is what influences. Now, that means that Rabbeinu Tam, in the 12th century, still believes in the Babylonian cosmology, including the flat earth, which is interesting. Just interesting that Ptolemaic cosmology had not made it to Rabbeinu Tam.
Wait, that's still from Babylonian.
The Ramban weirdly quotes Rabbeinu Tam on this, even though in general, as a right, methodological point, which also points out that you don't necessarily have to hold one thing is true everywhere. It could be, like, in principle, he thought that it could be wrong, and here they thought they were right. And many other Rishonim also believe this. The Ran says this and the like. Now, what motivates, right? So what motivates this, right? What would motivate you to say, yeah, it only means Nirin? But it's not true. Now, there is a more radical view. He doesn't quote it actually here, but or maybe he does actually. But well, let's stick with Rabbeinu Tam's not so radical view, right? Which is that Chazal said Nirin, and therefore what they meant is there's the logic to it, but they're wrong. What would motivate Rabbeinu Tam?
Not that Chazal's infallible, but that.
Okay, so you're going radical. Let's start the least radical read for Rabbeinu Tam.
What is the Masara?
No, you're already going radical. What's the least radical way of grouping
them? That he thought that this was right.
Yeah, exactly. The first possibility is that he's not arguing in principle with the Rambam that Chazal can't be wrong, right? And he just disagrees, either because where he is, he thinks that the Babylonian cosmology is right, and therefore he has no reason, or because, as Ray Slifkin suggests, based on Langerman, is that that Rabbeinu Tam thought this was a stirut that he understood sunrise, sunset in halakha context. So it's Tosfot being Tosfot. He's like, okay, it's a stirut sugyot. This sugya implies that the Chachamim Olam Ra'ah, another sugya implies that it was the way the Chachamim originally did it. The Chachamim were right, meaning a very, very minimalist view would be that Rabbeinu Tam isn't arguing in principle Chazal can be wrong. He just thought, for whatever reason, that Shas in general led to the conclusion that lahalacha we still paskin, like the Ptolemaic view. If that's the case, then sure, Rabbeinu Tam interpreted this Gemara differently, but it doesn't prove that, like, fundamentally he argued about how our epistemic approaches should work. It didn't prove anything. Right? Now, even if Rabbeinu Tam doesn't agree with this, who clearly does? Ramban. The fact that the Ramban approvingly quotes Rabbeinu Tam, but in other places, like by the rainbow, he's totally comfortable saying, yeah, we could be wrong, and right, means that the Ramban probably is just saying, yeah, maybe we're right here, maybe, but it's not a principled view that you have to be right. However, well, okay, fine, right? So that would be a minimalist view of Rumi Natam, minimalist in the epistemic sense, meaning he's not saying anything fundamentally different about epistemics than the Rambam. It's just that, whatever, that's how he understood this. I mean, I don't know, fine. I mean, that happens, right? It could be. So he understands this Gemara differently. It doesn't mean like in principle, it's just this is not a good Raya, right?
See, my one, though, it says here that Rabbeinu Tam thought, you know, oh, that the sages said that the weight of the argument is on the side of the non-Jews, that they're still correct. That's what it says in my.
You're correct, but what does that tell you about Rabbeinu Tam's epistemic approach? Yeah, doesn't tell you anything.
No, I'm saying he agrees.
Correct it. That's what I'm saying. So this is a minimalist view. Now, other people go farther, right, in the Rambam direction, say no, like he can't be right. Right, Rabbeinu Tam can't be right because Chazal, right? But okay, fine. Right, you know, Rabbeinu Tam can't be right in his read because, like, Chazal accepted they were right. But again, for our epistemic points, it doesn't, right, matter. It doesn't matter so much. Rav Azariah de Rossi, writing much later, who is one of these rationalists who gets, you know, attacked by a lot of non-rationalists, takes this, right, as a general rule that you see Chazal can be wrong in science in general, right? He's very, very insistent. Maharal is very not happy about this. Right, Marsha assumes that Chazal were really wrong on this. Rav Avram Cohen Pimentel and Minchat Cohen argues this. These are all in favor of the Rambam, yeah.
Okay.
In a very interesting passage, the Chabad Yair says that he quotes the proof that you can be wrong, but this is how he says it. If you make a mistake in Kabbalah, that's worse than making a mistake in astronomy. Because in astronomy, right, even though in both cases you're fundamentally misunderstanding reality, right, but in one of them it's okay to be wrong, in one of them it's not, right? Like, it's like, right? Very interesting. Rav Chadash thinks that Chazal were wrong. Now, as Rudy noted before, the question of whether Chazal can be wrong will spill over into other epistemic questions, like, can they be wrong in science when it affects halacha, right? And that's where you get into the spontaneous generation, right? And maybe we'll talk about it in the end. But yeah, Rav Yitzchak Lopranti quotes it in his Pachat Yitzchak in this context.
If it doesn't affect...
However, shockingly there, right? Sometimes... Now, he has... Right? So now, you could come up with, let's say, a middle view, which is maybe Chazal... Let's see... can be wrong, but that's a last resort. Or they can be wrong, but not if it affects halacha. Right? If it... About science when it affects halacha, because then there must be some misora involved, right? You could come up with some middle, right? Middle view rather than just like, right? And again, the truth is that even the Rambam doesn't necessarily tell you this is not true, right? It doesn't tell you that maybe by when halacha is involved, it doesn't say anything about that.
What's the reason?
It happens to be, though, the inverse, that in that piece by the Pachad Yitzchak, he quotes Rebbe Brazil, who says, no, Chazal can never be wrong. I had already read this Gemara. They were wrong that they were wrong, right? They were really right, right? They thought they were wrong, but they were wrong about being wrong. They were right. They were always right.
That means that they're wrong.
He's saying they're always right, but they thought
correct.
They're wrong.
So now, right, and then he notes that there are misnagdim who follow the Rambam, there are chassidim who follow. Right? So he notes that the Ruzhiner, this is the most chassidish way of saying what the Rambam says, which is, well, of course they were right. because non-Jews spend more time in the wisdom that doesn't matter so much. So like there, they could be right because we don't waste our time with such things. So that's like a Hasidic way of getting to the same epistemic claim. What? Okay, fine. Right, Reb Hirsch, even though sometimes he criticizes the Rambam for his, you know, universal acceptance of the Greeks, he also says, but okay, right, you see that, right, in science it's totally legitimate to listen to this. He notes that even the Ben Ish Chai, who's a, right, Kabbalist, not a, right, a very, very deep Kabbalist, in his early writings, he insists that Chazal must have been right, but in later writings, he's like, right, now we know astronomy, and like, yeah, Chazal were wrong, right? Whatever. Okay.
Is there
fine.
They
care about truth? They care about reality? I don't know. They give you all types of advice. Chazal have advice on health matters. God, this article goes forever. The one online is only 30 pages. This one's like 60 pages. Okay, fine. But what we've seen so far is the following. Is that many of the Mepharshim were totally comfortable with saying Chazal can be wrong in science. Chazal admitted they were wrong in science. Maybe not in halacha, right? But maybe even there. And then we saw Rabbeinu Tam, who says that in this case, Chazal were, in fact, not wrong. But we don't know for sure that he's opposed to it on principle with evidence of the fact, like the Ramban and the like, think Rabbeinu Tam is right, but still think in general Chazal can be wrong in science, right? Which means that so far we haven't seen so many people who advance a different epistemology. So where does the opposite epistemology come from? So this is where what he calls is the 16th century revolution. Right, that starting in the 16th century, many Mepharshim started to become uncomfortable with the idea that Chazal can be wrong. And he divides it into five categories, okay? He says one is the category of people who have reluctant acceptance of the Talmud in its plain meaning with apologetic explanations of how the sages could have been incorrect and or suggestions the matter has not been definitively resolved. Okay. Two is reinterpretation of certain terms that the sages were not saying anything inaccurate. Three is reframing the entire discussion as referring to mystical concepts rather than astronomy. Four is ignoring the general errors in the cosmology of the sages and focusing upon one aspect in which they were vindicated. Or five, flat out denying that the sages could have been mistaken.
Does he say he's typically guilty of this?
Yes, he now spends another 40 pages proving that each of these categories exists. If we get through all of it today, fine. If not, I said this would take us 2 weeks, right? How much we get through is fine. So he says, what is apologetic acceptance? What does that mean? So he quotes here the Akedah Yitzchak Ritzka Rambam. He said, the truth was discovered first by the Gentile scholars in their kingdoms because of their immense effort in pursuing the study of astronomy, which they concentrated on in order to serve the heavenly bodies in the foreign ways of their religion, which the Torah forbade, while the Jewish sages did not need to know all this astronomy, except as related to the intercalation of the months and the timing of the seasons and the new moons necessary for the Torah's commandments. The rest they considered foreign and a waste of time, foreign matters that were never permitted to study. So what is the Akedat Yitzchak's methodology basically saying? Yeah, like the Rizhner, which is they can be wrong, but only in things that don't matter so much. Okay? Right? They can be wrong in things that don't matter so much. What? Yeah, it's very interesting. Right? And he notes that the Abravanel has a version of this, right? So he says possibility one is to say, right? Yes, they can be wrong, but only things that don't matter. But in things that matter, they can't be wrong. Okay. Right? Then there's the stronger view is just to say, no, they can't be wrong. How can they not be wrong? So they have to reinterpret it because the simple problem Mara is they were wrong, right? I understand you. Why do you get frustrated that someone held a view that you don't like in the history of the world?
Because logically it doesn't make sense. It's like,
so follow the Rambam. So do I. But let me first explain what else exists. What?
No, he's trying to understand the other side.
Fine.
No,
don't explain. Let me first get the positions out. I get it. Right? What? Right? especially before you understand. Look, what's the logic? His logic is that his logic presumably is that Chazal. Now, look, it sort of makes sense at some level. If you think Chazal are engaged in pursuit of wisdom, and you think that they have Misora, or they have, right, presumably, you also think you have Ruach HaKodesh, you have things like that, right? So then you're going to be much more hesitant to say that they really belong with things that matter, because, right?
Then they wouldn't be human.
Okay. Fine. Let me put it differently to you, okay?
Okay.
Let's say there's someone you really respect. Pick someone you really respect.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Right? So if... So we all say Ruth Bader Ginsburg, okay, she was a Supreme Court Justice. Her expertise is law. Okay? If she said something which was just obviously incorrect about... how many flavors of Häagen-Dazs ice cream there are. I don't know. Right? So she's wrong. You would say, I can live with the fact that Ruth Bader Ginsburg is, like, wrong, but how many... whatever. That doesn't uproot my, like, faith in her. Right? But remember, she's not a scientist. She's a judge. But if she said something which was downright stupid about science, right? She just said, like, DNA is a hoax. Right? Then it has nothing to do with her being a judge. But would that weaken your faith in her ability to be judicious if you knew that she... It would, right?
A little bit, because it seems she didn't do the research. Basically.
Correct. So you understand now why someone might be uncomfortable and say, right, how could they... Right, if you think that science really matters and Chazal were really wrong about it, that can bother you. So what does he say? He says, look, they can be wrong, but not about the things that really matter. Right, you understand what they're doing. There's, you don't like it, fine, but you see that emotionally,
yes,
you get it, right? It's that you think someone's smart, so you don't expect them to be an expert in everything. But the difference between saying they're not an expert, right? So maybe they make mistakes, but to say something that's like, you know.
Even experts can be wrong, because over time.
Correct, but you understand. You're still, you don't jump to it. You're like, but I respect this person. How could they be so wrong about something so important, even if I'm not an expert? So yes. If, right, look, you're right. It probably wouldn't change her mind about Ruth Bader Ginsburg if she said, I am convinced, 100%, that string theory is right. And it turns out that string theory is not right. Okay? So there you would say, it really matters, I guess, right? Like, it's important about the nature of reality, right? But, like, I don't blame her for not knowing, because when she lived, no one knew. That's a totally rational thing to say, right? I'm just saying that some people might not be comfortable because they would say, well, she was
how
a really...
How could she not put in the lead work?
Right? Like, how could she be led astray? Didn't she read Peter White's book about string theory? Doesn't she know that he said it's not even wrong, that it's stupid? I mean, in Hanami, you could do that. You could be that upset with Ruth Bader Ginsburg for believing in string theory. Not even wrong.
Yeah.
No, it's actually his book. Peter White wrote a book about string theory called Not Even Wrong. It's a great book. It's great. Are you listening to my business? It's a great book. Great book. Fun times. What? Right. And she could have read Peter White's book or listened. She didn't want to read the book. She could have listened to Lex Fridman's podcast. No, I understand. Right. She didn't have Wikipedia. They didn't have Wikipedia. In a Hanami. Now, I will... What? Oh, but my point is that I know you're uncomfortable, but like, it's not crazy that someone is uncomfortable with saying, well, in the end, he admits they're wrong. He's just saying the things that matter. Now, you're right. Do I have sympathy with Ezra said, which is, yeah, but okay, that's great nowadays. But like then, like how are they supposed to know? So they didn't have access to it or whatever. Or do you really blame someone in the first generation of the Copernican Revolution?
No, I'm not mad at them, but then in future generations, we're not willing to say, okay, we need to change.
Right, like this is like in this book that I'm reading now by Paul Dicken, right? It's like How to Do Science Wrong or something like that, right? He has this very, he starts off, right? Now, this is very helpful. He starts off with this story. He says, look, everyone knows the story about Galileo, right? That he, you know, it's all dramatic and he pushes his way to the, to the Tower of Pisa with two different cannonballs, and he's saying, oh, I'm going to disprove Aristotle. Aristotle thinks that things fall because of they have a tendency towards heaviness to fall, right? And therefore, the heavier something is, the faster it falls, and I'm going to show that it's not true. And he goes up to the top of the Tower of Pisa, and he drops up two cannonballs, and they both land at the same time, and Shalom al Yisrael, we've proven it all. Yalog, he said, first of all, so he says, that's very nice, except, first of all, the story never happened. First time it's quoted is decades later. Second of all, it's not true. If you did that experiment, you would discover that they don't fall at the same rate because of air resistance. Mitupash, right? It's just not right. It's not right. Right? Not for the reason that Aristotle thought. But it's, right? What? Correct, the experiment is just wrong. And he said, we do have evidence. Not of this, but of other people who disagreed with Galileo doing the experiment and, in fact, finding that they landed at two different times. We have evidence of the opposite experiment, not this experiment, which actually proved that Galileo was not correct, but not for the reasons he thought, right? Point being, what's the point? The point is that Ezra's probably right, which is, look, it's not so easy, right? It's not so easy. The idea that there was a revolution in science and Chazal should have instantly known that Ptolemy was right and the Babylonians were wrong, right? It's much more pashut shot to say the reason I'm not offended that they didn't know is because...
How would they know?
How would they know? I agree with you. My sympathies are with you. But I do understand. What I want you to do, what I want to do, again, it's going to take us another week, maybe even two more weeks, I don't know. Like I said, the reason I give you Makaro is because I want to have a conversation because the questions that emerge with this are very important. Right, the epistemological question. I want you to grapple with what you're actually uncomfortable with. Right, is that? But I want you to also understand the other side. It's not stupid. The other side is not. Well, the other side isn't stupid. At the end of the day, he's not saying that they can't be wrong. What? Then you know. Then whatever. Then they're just not even wrong. They're not stupid. They're just not even wrong. This is one different problem. Different problem. Right?
Maybe.
What?
Maybe you're right. Leave the conversation.
No, you're not even wrong. Stop.
But then says David, we're still allowed to kill certain kinds of bugs on Shabbat because they spawn.
No, you can't. No, you can't. I paskin, you can't.
You okay? But do people follow your thing?
Correct. At a different time, we can talk about the four different sheetot and how to do it and why I paskin the way I do.
Yeah, I learned it.
Yeah, I understand both sides. I'm not like. But I'm sympathetic to the side that, for reasons in that sugya, right? In that sugya, I think it's actually Tolui and Metziut. I don't think everything that seems to be Tolui and Metziut is. I think that one is. Lidati. Dati. I understand great poskim disagreed with me. I don't think they're irrational, right? Meaning I happen to think the reasons in the sugya that I think that that's the case. Okay. Do we have time for another position? Gvuli here.
Go.
Yeah, I don't know if we have time for this. Okay, well, let's try. Okay, one more. The Ramah and the Ramah Mipanau both go to the opposite extreme. No, not only do they happen to be correct, Chazal had to be correct.
The Ramah?
Yep. Yeah, that one.
What?
Right? Why? So first of all, he points out that one of his reasons is that, as we talked about before, there are other Gemara. It's not only this Gemara. There are many other Gemara that continue to function on the right Chazal's view, right? So that's one of his pieces of evidence. Right. He then has specific explanations for how he understands the world. No, it's not going to work. We'll come back to it next time. We can't rush through it. We need to spend time on what is actually going on. If you want, take time to read the article yourself, and we can have a discussion about it. I think we can finish at least this one. The question of whether we then spend another share on the broader question, what this tells about how you read Agadata. I'd like to, but we'll see. But we definitely have to spend one more week. I plan to spend 2 weeks in the epistemology and what it tells us. Rudy, don't get so, you're always like, look, I understand.